Thomas Keller is the chef owner of French Laundry, Per Se, Bouchon, Bouchon Bakery, and it goes on, doesn't it, Thomas? Welcome.
Well, it's good to be here, and good to talk to you again.
Yeah, well, it's been a while. I said when I first picked up the phone, this book, you really did it this time, it's called Under Pressure, Cooking Sous Vide, which is one of the hottest technique going anymore, and it's a masterpiece. It's so simple. I can't imagine why now anybody will understand. Why bother with a technique like that requires special equipment? Congratulations on this.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Now, why don't we begin by just saying that Harold McGee, who's a food scientist extraordinaire, he introduces it at the front of the book as one of the most important culinary inventions of modern times. Now, that's a mouthful, and that's saying a lot. Could you explain what the technique is, the science of it?
Well, really, you know, it's... It allows us, as professionals, or anybody really, to, when we think about cooking, conventional cooking, we're always talking about time and temperature. How long take to cook something, and for how long, and at what temperature do you want to cook that specific thing? Well, what we've been able to do with these pieces of equipment, number one, the immersion circulator, which helps us a great deal in the time temperature, allows us to cook things at very, very, very specific temperatures, down to a tenth of a centigrade or a tenth of a degree Fahrenheit. The sous vide, or the vacuum packing machine, which we're all very familiar with sous vide. We see it every day. Boiling a bag, I think, is probably one of the easiest ways to describe it. But you see sous vide cold cuts, you know, they even sous vide lettuce greens. But the plastic, to put something in plastic and vacuum pack it and cook it in water, because as we all know, water allows heat transfer better than any other type of cooking today. So with the immersion circulator, with the vacuum packing machine, and with the water, we're allowed to cook things at a very, very precise temperature for a very precise amount of time, resulting in an extraordinary product.
Now, you have to practice a fair amount to know exactly how long to cook it and what temperature, so you missed that part out.
Well, I think it's like, you know, it's like anything that you're cooking. Every cooking technique requires practice, and this is just like anything else. It doesn't replace conventional cooking for us. It augments it. It gives us another technique to play with now.
Right. Now, you were very clear in your description of the benefits of this technique, and also what you should use it for and what you shouldn't use it for. Can you give some examples?
Well, I think that, you know, certainly some of the benefits, there are many, many benefits from storage, you know, obviously one of them. But just talking about the cooking benefits, the enhancement of the flavor of vegetables, for example, which to me is such a revolutionary application, cooking vegetables. And when I speak of vegetables, I'm not speaking of green vegetables. I'm speaking of other types of vegetables, artichokes, onions, potatoes, anything that we're cooking now in sous vide as it relates to our vegetables. The impact and flavor has been impacted tremendously. The flavors of those vegetables, none of the flavor is escaping. Whether it's through steam, whether it's through roasting or evaporation, it's all maintained within that bag. So the flavor is enhanced tremendously. That's one of the things that we're able to do with sous vide cooking. Obviously, some of the things that you don't want to do with sous vide cooking is green vegetables.
Now, why is that?
Well, because the gas that lies underneath the skin of the green vegetables and escapes in the boiling process, which maintains the bright, vivid color green. If there's nowhere for that gas to escape, then of course the vegetables turn brown. We've all seen that happen before when you cook green beans in a covered pot, for example, and the gases can't escape. They're put back into the water, and then therefore resulting in a brown vegetable.
I never knew that. That's such a simple thing. I learn something, Thomas, every time I talk to you that I didn't know before.
Well, thank you.
But this technique isn't exactly new. So you give a little bit of its history, but for our listeners, perhaps they would like to hear that.
Sure. The technique was developed in the 30s by Hills Brothers Coffee Company to vacuum pack coffee, keep it fresher. I think a lot of us, certainly, you know, people my age and older, realized it in the 50s when a company called Cryovac started vacuum packing turkeys. and of course freezing them. And then of course we saw turkeys now that are available year-round in our grocery stores. Up until that point, that wasn't available. In the 1970s, two French scientists, one Michel Parlus and the other Bruno Gosseau, started to work with specific chefs on specific techniques. Michel started working with Chef Foie Gras on cooking foie gras, and Bruno started working with Chef Robuchon on developing an entire menu, an entire repertoire for the French National Railroad. In order to have high-quality food that's associated with a three-star chef, i.e. Joel Robuchon, served on a speeding train. And it was at the end of the 1990s that we started to really experiment with sous vide cooking, and we became associated with Bruno Gosseau through his company Cuisine Solutions, and then a division called Five Leaf that is marketing chefs' recipes through the type of cooking where you can actually buy some recipes or buy some dishes that were created by likes of Daniel Boulud, Mark Miller, Charlie Trotter, and of course myself, where you can buy these boil-in-a-bag recipes that or dishes that we created for that. But the most important thing that came out of that wasn't necessarily the recipes that we did it or the marketing of the dishes that they've done, but the knowledge that we gained at our restaurants in order to really understand the different ways that sous vide could benefit what we were doing in the restaurant.
Now the vacuum packing you're talking about here, but the heat circulating machines that give you such control over temperature, that aren't they a little bit newer?
Well, no, those have been used in the medical. Well, they are a little newer.
They're newer in cooking.
Right. Yeah, you're absolutely right there. You're absolutely right. What we've been able to do in the immersion circulators. So just to give you a broader definition of sous vide is not necessarily only things that are cooked in plastic or things that we use in the vacuum machine. We define sous vide in our restaurant, which is in a way that encompasses the immersion circulator as well. So we cook things in the immersion circulator. It's not technically sous vide, but it falls under that umbrella of this new type of cooking for us. So the immersion circulator has been something that's been used in the medical industry for years to maintain specific temperatures while they incubate bacteria in petri dishes, for example. We're using that to generate a specific temperature in a water bath. And the wonderful thing about these is they're portable, so we can move them around the kitchen, move them around the country if we want to.
Right, Wiley Dufresne had one, but we saw it in his kitchen that he actually got from a chemistry lab. I think it wasn't a food oriented one
it
at all.
It was a medical lab.
It was a medical lab, yeah. Piece of medical lab equipment. Just
that was
as
a while
describing.
Ago. Yeah.
It was about
yeah.
five or six years
yeah.
ago.
Yeah, but and they still are, and that's where we get ours from.
But they're really costly. Thomas, I've been so itching to try this technique, but, you know, it's a very expensive investment to buy an immersion circulator, right?
Right.
Now, do you think that we're going to see this equipment become more cost-effective for home cooks?
I think so. I think you'll see it very soon. I know companies are working on that right now to introduce into the home kitchen. And if you think of the microwave, you know, 25 years ago when it was first introduced, it was something that was very rare. And now today, kitchens are come equipped. You know, a standard piece of equipment is a microwave oven.
Yeah, I've never thought that really realized its potential. I mean, what it was supposed to be. I don't use it.
Yeah. I think that the immersion circulators will become integrated in the home kitchens to where you will be able to purchase products that are produced from different companies and be able to take them home and actually heat them up in your immersion circulators.
Now, one of the things that you do in the book, Thomas, that's so intriguing is you bring together ingredients that don't necessarily spring to mind as being side by side, and as a result of cooking them together, you get some kind of catalytic event that takes place in terms of the flavor.
Uh-huh.
Am I sensing that correctly?
Well, I think that there's that way that happens in the bag, but there's also that way that happens when we cook conventionally.
Conventionally, anyway, yes.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Now, I think you also talk about compressing things as well, though.
Right.
You haven't talked about that
so
far.
Oh, yeah, I wanted to ask about that because you refer to this chamber vacuum. I mean, I have to tell you, when I first got my little vacuum machine, the first thing I did was I had this big loaf of rustic Italian bread. And we put it under vacuum. It was hysterical.
She proceeded to extract all the air from the bread. So we didn't do that again.
And then the other one was I had an octopus, and it was hysterical. It looked like a two-dimensional cardboard cutout of an octopus. All the little suckers even got flattened out.
But it cooked up beautifully.
It did, but I'm thinking that having more control, as you suggest, these chamber vacuums, you could then apply an amount of pressure more appropriate to the delicacy of the product you're dealing with, right?
Well, that's absolutely true. As I said, there are many different types of chamber machines that are manufactured by different companies. They go anywhere from what they call a gas flush machine, where they replace the oxygen, they extract the oxygen from the bag, but they replace it with nitrogen, which is an inert gas, and they'll use those when they want to cryovac or vacuum herbs or lettuces.
Oh, okay.
So they do that. That's the way that's done in a chamber machine, by replacing the two gases, one removing the oxygen, replacing it with nitrogen. For us, we're not really using it for those purposes. We're using it, you know, primarily to cook in, or as you say, compress in, or store things in. Compression is very interesting because you'll take it first became aware of it when we first compressed a piece of watermelon. And we all know what a piece of watermelon looks like and what a piece of watermelon tastes like. When it's compressed to remove all the air, it becomes very, very dense. The color is magnified, you know, 20 times. So it really looked like a beautiful piece of sashimi tuna.
Yeah, and you have wonderful photographs, I might mention, in the book that illustrates these what you're talking about.
So compression has been a lot of fun for us, and that happens immediately as soon as the vacuum machine has finished its cycle. The product is compressed, whether it's a cucumber, a melon, a tomato, whatever we're compressing.
Cherries.
Now, do you actually you actually press it? I mean, there's a device that also squeezes it, or does the vacuuming do that?
The vacuuming does that by removing all the air and then compressing around. Then the air is once removed, and the bag is compressed through that vacuum.
Now we have a patent on compressing bread, by the way. So so if you stop putting that on your menu, you'll be in trouble with your diners too, because I can tell you, we took it out of the package and we tried to eat it, and it was just impossible.
It was funny. It was funny.
I can imagine.
Yeah. Now you say two things I wanted to address here. One, you're discussing. Well, you're always so philosophical anyhow, but you're discussing emotions as regards to cooking.
Mm-hmm.
That one of the things that you could see in sous vide was that you could lose the sense, the emotional involvement with the craft and the soul.
Right, we call it
the craft
of cooking, and when, you know, sous vide is something that becomes so precise, you know, we can cook a saddle of Keith Martin's lamb, for example.
Yeah.
You know, it takes us for 50 minutes at 61.5 degrees to cook that saddle of lamb on the bone, medium rare. Now, no longer does the chef have to know, has to finesse the cooking, has to be able to feel the meat to understand when it's done, and to feel the meat, understand when to take it out of the oven, understand how hot his oven is. All the different elements that come into a person's consciousness when they're cooking, that's removed, because you're just dropping it in a tank of water and cooking it for a specific amount of time at a specific temperature, knowing that it's going to come out medium rare at the end.
Yeah.
So we don't want to lose that. I mean, it's something that, you know, I'm very concerned about. I want to make sure that our young chefs are able to maintain the knowledge and the techniques that are needed to be able to cook a saddle of lamb medium rare without benefit of an immersion circulator or a vacuum machine.
Now, you mentioned in your book, though, that there are some things that just don't do well sous vide. So can you give us some examples of that? I mean, there are things that should be braised because it does something to them that sous vide doesn't do.
Well, I think that, you know, when you're talking about braising certain types of meats on the bones, which are somewhat difficult to cook in sous vide, but not impossible. But I think the action, it's more about the action of the cooking, the nuances of the aromas that you smell, that you lose all that when you're cooking in sous vide. There is no aroma anymore. You don't hear the sounds that you do when you're cooking, when you're starting to brown off your vegetables and your meats. You don't have that opportunity to feel that connection with the food as we do, and that's such a magical thing to do, to be able to braise a beautiful piece of meat, because it does go through so a transition to become from something that's very tough and to something that's very tender and succulent.
Now, these recipes are you really targeting the home chef? I mean, first of all, the home chef would have to buy the necessary equipment. The ingredients are, now you say where you can get them all, but they're certainly not something that would be in.
And they're in metric, are they not?
But they wouldn't necessarily be in our pantry, and our pantry is larger than most people's.
Right. This book was written for the professional cook.
Oh, it was? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, it's because of the equipment that's needed, because of the technology that you have to have, it's something that I wanted to really target to the professional. It's such a new, I don't say it's such a new technique, but it's a new technique to many young cooks, many young chefs, and I wanted to give them this information so that they, once they begin the process of exploring this, of experimenting with it, they had a tool, they had this book to be able to use so they can guide them through the process.
Well, I think the other thing you've done is to show them the immense range of products that could be brought together, vast range of ingredients and the juxtapositions of ingredients in unusual ways.
And the valuable applications section is very good.
Now, the one that I did smile about was the tripe recipe where at the bottom it says service 50.
Most, it's hard to cook tripe for six.
most of your quantities produce dishes in slightly smaller numbers.
Yeah.
Is that someone's like, that's a joke?
Well, it's, you know, when we buy tripe, you know, we buy in 10 pound cases, so it's
okay.
Really, you know.
So you can't just go to your friendly neighborhood butcher and say, I'd like a pound of tripe because I'm cutting Thomas Carr's recipe
you
by
could.
10.
You could. I mean, if you certainly wanted to experiment with that recipe and you have the equipment, you certainly could.
Well, now, I want to point out that you also give all of your chefs recognition in this book, which is... this is one of your traits you don't take all the credit yourself, and they've worked on sous vide quite a lot at two restaurants, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Jonathan Benno came to me 3 years ago and said, Chef, we have to write the first English sous vide book, and that's kind of what the genesis was, and of course, you know, getting Corey Lee involved from the French Laundry was very important. So we had Corey and Jonathan who were cooking at the same levels, the same philosophical approaches, the same culture, and working together with me and on these recipes. And of course, we needed to have something for dessert, which, you know, when you talk about sous vide applications being the least impactful, it's probably in dessert. But certainly we wanted to make this a well-rounded book, so bringing some desserts in. Of course, Sebastian Ruxell, who's been our pastry chef for the past 10 years.
Yeah, the custard sounds so simple.
Now, your old friend from the French Laundry was on the program not too long ago. He's at the CIA. Is he at the CIA now?
Stephen.
You mean the
frozen dessert guy.
Frozen dessert.
Oh, Francisco.
Yes, he was
Francisco.
On the...
Francisco Magoya.
He was on the program just a few weeks ago.
He was
wonderful book he wrote.
That's what he talked to us about. But... I did want to recap one thing for listeners, because it comes out of what we were just talking about, because when I talked to you last, when Anne was indisposed and you were in Pittsburgh just a little more than a year ago, I said, are you still a chef? And you thought about it and you said, well, perhaps I'm really not anymore. I'm a restaurateur, but I'm not a chef. And I said, well, how have you been successful? And you said, it's because of my team.
Yeah.
That's very evident in this book as well. And I think it's just wonderful that they share the limelight with you.
Well, thank you. I think it's important for them to, for a number of reasons. I mean, you know, because they were such great contributors and collaborators with this book. But number two, you know, it starts to teach them. It starts to give them those opportunities of getting their name out there and starting to feel what it's like to be impactful and to be asked questions and to really be knowledgeable and to be identified as somebody who's knowledgeable about a specific technique. And of course, this one being sous vide.
Thomas, one other thing: how are you keeping pace with all this? You're on such a tough schedule.
It's been a little bit of a whirlwind here for the past couple of weeks since the book came out, and with everything that's going on, the holiday season, of course, and the last book I wrote, which is Bouchon, of course, we hadn't gone through the expansion process, so we didn't have Percée in New York, and we didn't have Bouchon in Las Vegas, so it was a little, I think, a little easier to control back then. But certainly it's...
That's an easy book to use, by the way, I must say.
Thank you.
I mean, I have to admit, I have really not cooked anything out of the French Laundry cookbook, except maybe little items, you
there
know
you
what
go.
I mean?
But we do have a new tongue recipe. You have a tongue recipe. We don't have a machine to make it, but I do have a new brine for tongue.
Oh, good.
So that's in this book.
In this book. We can use that.
No reason it shouldn't work in a conventional manner, right? You
still, not at all. It's beautiful. It comes out to be a beautiful tongue.
But you have to brine it for 28 days. I don't know if you...
I didn't.
Well, that's based on the tongue that we did at the French Laundry, I think. Hillary's tongue, which was Eric Siebold's mother's.
that's exactly the one you refer to.
Eric Siebold's mother's tongue.
Yeah, we got a tongue as part of a potluck extract of part of a cow.
We
were trying to find a recipe for it, and fortunately
Anne Willen
country French cooking came through, but now we have another one to try, so now all we have to do is see where we can find another tongue.
I have one question that's kind of burning, is why is the health department at odds with this?
Well, because there's bacteria, and you talk about the anaerobic bacteria that's developed in an environment where there's no oxygen.
That's kind of scary, yeah.
They're really, really worried about that, and rightly so. And I think that it's very important that it be addressed right from the beginning, and that's why we developed the HACCP program, working with the New York City Environmental Health Department. Bruno Gosseau came up and worked with us with the Environmental Health Department, so they can learn about it. They really needed to learn about it. They didn't understand it. They didn't understand the process. They didn't understand the technique. They didn't understand what needed to be done, what we had to be aware of and avoid.
But you've used...
So we went through that process and developed that program. And now we've been approved by the New York City Health Department for the sous vide cooking.
And you outline safety techniques and
very important
steps for safety in this book.
Very important.
Now, one last thing, listeners. It's just by way of a little bit of a joke for the time of year. We know Thomas is in Washington D.C. talking to us right now, but there is no truth to rumors that he is going to be part of the new administration. there isn't a job that's big enough.
I want a new president-elect to put a culinary garden at the White House.
Hey, that's not a bad idea. Can we campaign for that?
Yeah, we should all campaign for that.
That would be good.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Thomas.
Once
again, a delight to talk to you.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Thomas. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
On the Menu is delighted to have the opportunity to welcome Chef Thomas Keller to Pittsburgh. We caught up with him because he's doing a very special event this evening, and book signing at Williams-Sonoma tomorrow. But Thomas, tell us first of all, why Taste America? What is this program about that brings you to Pittsburgh?
Yeah, Taste of America is a wonderful program. It's the first year we've done this. It's a James Beard-sponsored event. And what we're trying to do, the goal is to have chefs from around the country, well-known chefs, Beard Award winners specifically, take their show on the road, if you will. And do a dinner in a city that's not their hometown. So in other words, I'm here in Pittsburgh basically because we're at the Duquesne Club, first of all, which is a great place to be. But it's also the home of my father, and I still have some family here, so it's just wonderful to be back here in Pittsburgh. The other added attraction, of course, in Pittsburgh is Keith Martin and Elysian Fields Farm Lane.
What did listeners miss?
Well, I think we missed the certainly a wonderful event here at the Duquesne Club, an opportunity to support the James Beard Foundation, which is the only foundation in America that's promoting the young chefs of our country and the cuisine of America.
Now, do you think that, Thomas, that they're going to do this again?
Well, it really depends on the success of these events. This is going on for the next several months around the country with different chefs doing their events in different cities. So hopefully get great response from it. The guests will enjoy it and ask us to do it next year.
Well, that will be wonderful. And we'll get more advance notice next year as well, so we'll have the opportunity, listeners, to tell you more about it so you can plan it into your future. Now, let's more specifically say what they're going to miss is a wonderful dinner. Take us through the menu, Thomas.
Well, we have a wonderful menu. A lot of the things, certainly we're talking about seasonal items. Some of them are very special to us at the French Laundry and here at the Duquesne Club as well, one of them certainly being the Elysian Fields Farm Lamb from Keith Martin. We're doing that tonight, so it's a wonderful, wonderful product, and we're always very happy to use it. Certainly another thing that we very much enjoy using is Hearts of Palm, which comes from our grower in Hawaii, so really bringing something from that state here to Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh in specific, that they may not have opportunities to experience very often. Another one of our wonderful courses is our sturgeon, and specifically using the caviar from the Sacramento River from our white sturgeon in California. So using a domestic caviar and trying to introduce that.
Well, that sounds like it's almost too bad we missed it.
Well, we'll get it next year.
Okay. Now, these are dishes that you do for Per Se and the French Laundry also.
Yes, these are really indicative of what we're doing at the restaurants this time of the year. We have corn and chanterelle mushrooms with the lobster. We have sunchokes and onions and leeks with the lamb. So hearts of palm with radishes. So these are really indicative of what we're doing at the restaurants this time of the year.
Well, it just sounds like too much fun. Chef Koganov, you have the wonderful opportunity to host this event here at the club where you've been a chef for a very long time. What's it been like having the Keller team?
Well, thanks for having me, first of all. Having Chef Keller and his team has been, first of all, a lot of anticipation, a lot of uncertainty, but in a very positive way. We have a new kitchen, and we're excited to have top caliber world-class chefs come into our kitchen to see it, to work in it, and to share their knowledge with our staff, which is probably the most important aspect of having them with us. Our staff gets to work alongside of them. They get to see new techniques, new ingredients, new style of presentation, and for that, we're very thankful to be able to expand our horizons.
Right, now, there's a little bit of a special celebration for the club itself, I believe, in that you just opened a magnificent new wine cellar.
Yes, the wine cellar is called the Cove. It's in the basement of a building. It was an older area that had some very unique and beautiful stonework, and we. We saved and salvaged that, and then we developed a wine cellar around that. So it has a tasting room outside with very nice glass panels that allow you to look into the wine cellar. It's a beautiful space for very small, intimate affairs at the